everyone. Welcome to the Dead Wax podcast. I'm your host, Dietrich Plyler, and joining me is
Josh Hill.
Josh Hill, my co-host. Today is a special day because, did I say it already? It's the first episode of the Dead Wax podcast and episode one of our series called Record Skip, where we go over the records that have been skipped by artists that you probably love or don't love. I didn't love the person we're talking about today. Yeah. I don't know if you do.
You know, honestly, I don't really love or hate him. I mean, I'm kind of indifferent on him.
I think more than anything, I think we respect him.
Yeah.
I think we do. And you were showing me 10 minutes ago, like a live album he had from like 02, I think, is when it's set on Spotify. I actually don't know when it was recorded, but he's a good guitar player, man.
Yeah.
He can bust out, and I've seen, actually, we should probably say who we're talking about first. We're talking about Prince today, and we're talking about his infamous Black Album released in 1987, recorded around that time, right?
Right. I mean, I think it was around 87 was when it was recorded, and then intended to be released in 87, and then kind of there's a whole backstory about it.
Yeah, and we're gonna get into that for sure. But so Prince's Black Album, and I was just talking about how great guitar player, and I was gonna mention there was an awesome video of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame when they did When My Guitar Gently Weeps by the Beatles. I think there's like Tom Petty, Jeff Lynne, George Harrison's son was on stage, and there was other people, I just don't remember who, but those were the ones I remember seeing there. And Prince did like the end guitar solo, like 2.5 minutes, and the dude killed it. I think it was his, like one of his moves was he threw his guitar to like a PA or something like that.
Yeah,
he tossed that thing right off the stage, and it was a pretty good guitar solo. So I think we respect him more than anything, and I think you know more about or have heard more Prince songs than I have. I've heard like a couple, maybe like six, and I think I liked other than what we're gonna listen to today. I've heard like six, and a couple I've liked, and a few I was like indifferent toward, you know.
So yeah, Prince is one of these artists that, I mean, the guy was just so prolific during his life. I mean, he was always in the studio recording stuff. I mean, I couldn't even tell you how many albums he actually has.
Oh my God, I looked through it. I didn't count.
Yeah.
But it was like, I thought he was kind of like really big in the 80s, into the 90s.
Well, I think he started in 79?
Probably.
78, yeah. 79 was like his first album.
And I thought he was just kind of like an 80s, like early 90s artist, and that was it. But he released things through the 90s. Through the 2000s, up to a year before his death, he put out music, you know?
And so, actually, the estate released something.
I heard like that, like archival, like compilation thing. Well, what's it, Welcome to America?
I think so.
Is that what's called? Yeah. Is that like the Eddie Murphy movies?
I don't know.
Is that an Eddie Murphy movie? Sort of Welcome to America or something? Probably not. I hope not. Oh my God, I hope not. Those movies are terrible. Oh man. Eddie Murphy, man.
Yeah. He's not too bad.
He's all right. You sleep with one. Never mind. I'm not going to talk about that right now. All right. So, our introduction to the Black Album. So, we have here that the Black Album has ironically been the white whale for many of a Prince collector. The original album was slated to be released in 1988, not 87, 88, after Sign of the Times, or Sign, Peace Sign of the Times, in an entirely black sleeve with no name or title on it. However, at the last minute, Prince got cold feet and pulled the album from release, citing that it was evil. An evil album. I wonder why he thought... What about it do you think?
You know, I think from what I've read, he put this album out. It's supposed to be the funk bible.
Right.
And it's just this more angry album. One of the more angrier albums that he's recorded. And I've read that he thought it was too angry. Like, he didn't want it... If something were to happen to him, he didn't want that to be his last album to be remembered by. So he pulled it. I mean, he thought it was just too aggressive, too angry, whatever. And he thought if something were to happen to him, he didn't want people to remember that as his last album.
I guess so. Yeah, I could see why.
Now, whether or not that really is the reason why, I mean, I don't know.
Right,
but
it could have been anything. If that's what he said, though, that's what he said.
Yeah.
I agree with the notion. I wouldn't want this. After the albums he put out beforehand, like Purple Rain was a few years before Sign of the Times, was before this. His self-titles, everything was all is really. I think all his really good material was before this. He had a lot of good stuff that came out, like well-known and popular.
Purple Rain. I mean, When Doves Cry on that album, and Let's Go Crazy. I love Let's Go Crazy.
Well, and the title track. I think you said Purple Rain song. Yeah. They have the Super Bowl performance he did in I think 2011, ending with that song. Really, that's great. I think. To me, that it might be one of the first things I saw from Prince.
Yeah.
I think, like a long time ago. I don't think I saw it on TV. I don't think I cared much about... I didn't know. I was... 2011, I don't want to, like...
I don't think it was 2011. I want to say it was, like, 05.
Really?
I think it was earlier than 11. I'm not for sure, but...
Either way, I didn't see it. So yeah. I've seen it on YouTube probably 5 or 6 years ago. It's a great... performance. Oh my God.
It's kind of funny because there's a documentary talking about like a bunch of different Super Bowl halftime shows, and they get to his, and they're talking about how, I mean, obviously, I don't know what every song he played during his performance, but he ended with Purple Rain.
He did.
And the thing was, is they knew that evening it was supposed to rain or something, like there was weather in the forecast.
Yep.
And they were like trying to get in contact with him and figure out what he wanted to do, and he knew that he was going to end with like Purple Rain or whatever. He's like, well, that just fits it even better.
Yeah, it does.
And I mean,
it kind of
creates the whole emotion of that song.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a great song. Great song, great performance. So, other than that, it was evil. Instead, the brighter Love Sexy was released, I think, that year as well.
Now, do you know any songs off of Love Sexy?
I know, and we're going to get into it later and come back around to it, but I know... I think it's called When Two Are in Love from this album is on Love Sexy. And I might be wrong in this, but I think that song is also in that Batman soundtrack. I think.
Maybe so.
It might not be, but I think it is.
Yeah, because I mean, this was all around that same period. I think this was, you're talking 88. I think the Batman movie came out like 89. And he did the whole soundtrack
It was the Tim Burton one then? Mm-hmm. Okay, that would have been like 89. Yeah, because then they had like the... Who did the ones... The George Clooney ones. Who did those?
I don't think it was like a singular artist that did the soundtrack for him, but who directed
those movies?
Those were Joel Schumacher.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So the first two Michael Keaton was Tim Burton.
Yeah, okay.
And then
okay.
after that was Joel Schumacher.
Yeah, okay. And that had Prince. I know the 89 one had Prince for sure. Okay, yeah. Well, cool. Okay. Well, I'm
and that's
glad.
That's actually a pretty good soundtrack, too.
I've heard it, yeah. But... Love Sexy, other than When Two Are in Love, I don't think I know a single song.
Yeah, I don't think I do either.
Yeah.
Like I said, Prince has so much music that it's like...
ton.
I mean, it's... For... I guess if you were alive during that time when he was putting out the music, it'd be easier to keep up with it.
Right.
But for us now, it's like you have to go back and look at that entire catalog.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of daunting.
It is. It's intimidating. I think that's one reason why, like... I know for the longest time, going into like high school, I would never listen to like the Beatles. Mm-hmm. Like I didn't because it's just so much.
You don't
like,
know where to start.
Yeah, the Rolling Stones have a lot of music. The Who has a lot of music. Prince has a lot of music. A lot of classic rock bands, everyone regarded like highly. I just never listened to because there's so much. Like where you don't know where to start. And thankfully, like the internet, Spotify streaming has like made it easier for people to get into things that they might not have before, and Prince is definitely one that I think further on I should probably listen to more.
Right.
Because you've showed me songs I like. We're going to talk about songs today that we probably don't like.
Right.
But, you know, that being said, he has a daunting discography, that's for sure. So it says the Black Album was also intended to reconnect Prince with his black audience, as ambitious works like Purple Rain and Around the World in a Day were beginning to alienate him from that audience. So I think, like, when you listen to these songs, I think there's one song in there, I don't remember which one, we're going to talk about it, that is like a hip-hop diss song.
Right.
We're going to talk about too. So I think that was part of, like, that connecting back with the black audience. The short set of 8 songs eventually got released in 1994 as a concession to help Prince fulfill his contract with Warner Bros. More quickly. So I guess if you wanted to push out something this was when he
had
to push out.
Yeah, I think this was something that he still didn't want to release, but probably it was kind of just contractually obligated. Yeah. Like, you have to put out something, and he already had this album, so I think he just really wanted out of that contract. I know there's, like, Prince had one of these huge contract deals in, like, the early 90s, and that's actually why I think he started going by the artist formerly known as Prince.
Really?
It was some sort of way to get out of, like, a contract. I'm not sure. I'd have to look into all this stuff again.
Okay.
But he made, like, a huge contract deal with, it might have been Warner Brothers. Or maybe, is that the one that he was leaving?
It's when he was, I think that would make sense also for the, I think the Batman movie was on Warner Bros. Too.
Yeah, probably so. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't know about the formerly known, I did not know that.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
In like the early to mid 90s, I want to say, he started going by the artist formerly known as Prince, and that was strictly, you know, contract reasons to get out of. Yeah, to just,
Prince.
You know.
Okay.
Get out of certain things with his contract. And I guess to release music.
Yeah.
Like, he couldn't release certain music, maybe under the moniker of Prince.
Right.
Or whatever. So he just started going by the artist formerly known as Prince. And
yeah. Okay. Well, I think we're ready to get into side one, track one. What do you think?
Yeah, let's do it.
A1, we have our first song, Le Grind. The Grind. The song covers a common topic in Prince's discography, dancing and sex. The spoken intro that opens the song is continued throughout the entire album, seemingly ending with a party scenario on Bob George, which is a song later in the album. So is this a concept album?
Maybe.
About,
I mean, you might
dancing?
Be able to sort of make that connection.
Maybe. Huh, I didn't think about that. Prince uses many vocal effects during the song, most likely to stimulate the sexual feeling and groove he attempts to achieve on the track.
Yeah, you know, the thing with Prince, and I mean, especially on this album, obviously we haven't listened to a lot of Prince albums, but this would be one of those albums that I'd like for someone to actually go into the track and break it down and see exactly what's going on.
Because, oh yeah,
I mean,
there's a lot.
You hear these songs and there's like, you know, people break them down and there's stuff going on that you've never heard of before.
Right, yeah.
You know, and it's like, no matter how many times you listen to it, it's still going to be something new. I think there'd be a lot of that on this song particularly.
Yeah, I mean, well, there's like vocal hits,
mm-hmm.
there's effects going on. I mean, it does sound of the times.
Right.
It does sound like an 80s
right.
song. It kind of sounds
really
like
reverb snare drum.
Yeah,
hits,
and if you get like, you know, you go to like a thrift store and they have like a piano, like a toy piano.
Right.
And they have like effects and you can hit a key and it goes like pow!
Yeah.
Like some like onomatopoeia thing.
Yeah.
Or whatever. That's kind of what this reminds me of a little bit, like the hits and stuff. Overall, not a bad song.
No.
I think if it was shorter and kind of worked as like a, kind of like a segue track almost, like a minute and a half long kind of tune, it'd be kind of cool. And I think we'll mention it again later. A lot of these songs would be really cool in a live setting. And he's played Le Grind in live before. I've seen it on YouTube. You can watch it. He's played it before and it's kind of like a jam.
Right.
A lot of jammy tracks on this. So we're going to hear more. And it's a jammy album. I don't think it's a bad song. It's not great. Would I open an album with this kind of song? Probably not.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what message it conveys, or it does sort of set the tone for the record. But is it like a good tone to set? Maybe.
You know, lyically, I don't know what sort of tone you could draw from it. But
there isn't, yeah.
I mean, just instrumentally, you know, I mean, clearly you can tell he's wanting to get back to like this sort of funk feel.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
That's obviously what he's going for.
I think
here.
That it accomplishes that. Like, what I was saying though, it's, there just needs to be something more going on. The instrumental's cool,
mm-hmm.
but there's not like a verse, chorus. And I know, and I can tell he he probably planned for it to not be. And like I said before, it would work in a live setting really well. But like on an album that you want people to sit down and like commercially listen to, I don't think it accomplishes anything. If I heard that as a first song, I'd probably not want to listen to the rest of the album.
And the thing with Prince too is like, you know, at this point in his career, he was already massive.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
So I mean, he could kind of do whatever he wanted.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, if he just went into the studio, which he often did. He would just go into the studio for, you know, weeks and weeks. I know there was an interview that came out not too long ago with one of his studio engineers, and she said that he would play like a 3-hour show. And then immediately afterwards, come into the studio and record all night. I mean, he's just constantly, you know, making stuff. And I could see at this point, he would just go in, like, you know, crank out a song like Le Grind and just go with that.
Yeah.
You know? Even though there's not really too much of, like, structure to it lyrically or, you know, and like you said, it just kind of feels like this big jam.
Yeah. Which a lot of these songs do.
Right. I mean, you know, that's what he wants, you know?
Yeah. And like I said, I don't totally love it, but I can respect it.
Right.
And that's why I think this song is not bad.
Right.
I don't think on this entire album there's not a bad song, and we're going to hear more of it later, and we're going to talk about them later. I don't think any of them are like, I don't like bad, I hate this, it's not unlistenable.
Right.
Because it's Prince. He doesn't make bad music. It's
right.
It's just, there's when you have so much to compare to, like, from, you know, Purple Rain, the soundtrack, even his like self-titled that we talked about, Around the World in a Day, there's all that, and then you have like this. It's kind of like, huh, like, okay. And I kind of take back what I said. I'd hear this song if I put it on an LP in like 88 or whatever. I'd probably continue, like, oh, that's interesting. You know, I'll keep listening, and then we'll get more, because there's songs after this that aren't as good as Le Grind is. But overall, I think it's all
right.
I think it's okay. Like, I'm a little indifferent, not bad, not good, you know, so that's kind of what I have to say about it. So.
And I mean, you kind of touched upon it before. There's like this line of vocals kind of starting off the song. I mean, you can hardly hear them because they're really buried in the mix.
Right.
You know, but it indicates that there's like, you know, that he's back with this like New Testament of like the funk Bible or something, you know.
And it also, we have put down here, it says, while this song mostly covers the aforementioned subjects of like dancing and sex, which is a common theme for him, but it says there's also an underlying theme of black empowerment. Prince tells the listener, African Americans deserve to feel liberated, strong, and intelligent, as stated in the intro, and you had like the funk Bible and everything like that. So, anything else about this track, or do you want to move on to the next one?
Let's move on.
Not a lot to talk about on that one, though.
No,
not really.
Much.
The intro is kind of, and just the instrumental, but all right, let's move on to track two, Cindy C. Sydney C is about Sydney Crawford. I think she was a supermodel or something. I don't know. She's on a TV show.
She was huge in like the early 90s, late 80s, around
you.
That time, I think.
I don't know. I think she was on like MTV's House of Style.
Okay.
That sounds right. So this song, Sydney C, is a diss song produced by Prince after a failed meeting with Cindy Crawford. Prince and Crawford, who at the time was only just gaining worldwide acclaim, were at the same nightclub one night in Paris, France, in like the 86, 87 era, and Prince attempted to get Cindy to come over to his table so he could meet her. According to the story, Crawford had her bodyguard, who was with her at the club, reject Prince's offer to hang out. Prince, pissed off that he was snubbed, then went on to write the song Cindy C as his response to being told that the supermodel did not want to hang out with the then at the time more famous Prince. Actually, Cindy Crawford has a different story to tell, which we'll play right now.
I was out at this club called Nell's on 14th Street in New York, dancing with my friend, and all of a sudden there was this littler person that came and started dancing with me, and it was like, oh, like, that's Prince. So cool. And then cut to, I don't know, not that long afterwards, someone was like, do you know Prince wrote a song about you? And it's on the Black album, which I still have, and it had a song on it called Cindy C.
It's pretty racy, too.
Yes, and now I know it was going through his mind as we were dancing.
Josh, what are your thoughts about Cindy C?
You know, the first time I heard this, I didn't know it was actually about her, and I just thought it was another track that, you know...
About Prince, some woman.
Yeah, some woman, Prince trying to get with her, whatever, you know. And it's kind of funny, because, like, halfway through the song, there's this kind of odd chorus that comes out of nowhere, and it's, like, Prince sounding like he's antagonizing this girl trying to get with her, and she's like rejecting him.
Uh-huh.
And it, like I said, it comes out of nowhere. He's like, you know, kind of screaming at her to like, why won't you be with me or something.
Yeah.
And it just kind of takes you out of the track, and you're like, it kind of made me like go through the song again, read the lyrics, and try to figure out what it's actually about. And to me, kind of sounds stalkerish, but
a tad. So once you know the backstory that we talked about, the song makes more sense.
Right. Right.
But I could definitely totally see how like it would come off in a weird kind of why won't you, and he says it in the song, and I can read it right here. We have a chorus right before like the spoken word part and before the rapping by Cat Glover, which I'll actually read too. It says, come on Sydney, don't you want to play with me, don't you want to play with me, what's the matter with me Sydney, oh Sydney C, won't you play with me. And like without context, that would be
And
a
it's
little
just
weird.
His delivery on it.
Oh yeah.
Just so like
dry,
intense.
Right in your ear, and kind of sound to it.
It's just, you know, comes out of nowhere.
A little.
You know, takes you by
surprise. Psychopathic.
Yeah, right.
A tad. I won't lie. The funny thing about this song though, is that the rapping by Cat Glover on it has, I think, completely different lyrical content. It has nothing to do, and I'll read it here. Cat Glover says, music is the key to set yourself free from depression, drugs, and increasing poverty. The key is to the lock is on the door. The door has a knob that you've never turned before. The jack, use the jack, it opens up the lock, because there's the key to unlock the body. Place it like that to open the door to the house full of people galore. The beat won't stop till the JM jocks, and he jacks the box till the party rocks. The clock tick-tocks and the place gets hot, and believe it or not, all the troubles you forgot. It's just that easy if you want it to be for all the fellas and young ladies to ease your mind and set yourself free to the mystifying music that we call Sydney C. So it kind of comes back around, but it's like a kind of like an anthem-y kind of music is awesome rap verse, which doesn't really tie in with the rest of the song.
Right.
I think they, and like we mentioned before, it was kind of his way of getting his Black audience to kind of come back, and this kind of just is thrown into the song at the end.
Right.
Just
now,
as a,
now,
you know.
Who is Cat Glover?
Cat Glover, I have it right here. Cat Glover is actually a professional choreographer, dancer, and singer.
Okay.
So she was on a lot of late work from Prince in the late 80s. Choreographed and appeared in several of the videos for the Sign of the Times concert film with Prince, and traveled with him as a backing vocalist and dancer for the Love Sexy tour.
Okay.
And rapped on both the Black album track Cindy C and the Love Sexy song Alphabet Street. So that's where she kind of plays in with Prince. So,
I mean, overall, this track, I do like it. I mean,
I think it has
a similar feel to LaGrind.
It does.
And
it
if
does.
You actually listen to like the album as a whole thing, mm-hmm. like there's almost this seamless transition from LaGrind to Cindy C.
Oh yeah.
Because it's almost got like same tempo, same feel, mm-hmm. you know, different keys and obviously like that.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I think this is probably one of my favorite tracks off the album.
Yeah, and I wrote it here too. I said it was similar to LaGrind. Funky and upbeat, two solid songs in a row.
Yeah.
You know, nothing bad yet. Both sort of, especially the LaGrind, but this one kind of also meanders in the lyrics a little bit. Kind of pretty repetitive. Same point is pushed forward the entire time. I wasn't too sure where the song was going. Same as LaGrind. A little empty, but not bad, like
now,
I said before, not bad.
Now, who plays sax on this? Because there's some great sax lines in here.
Yeah.
And there's, a really good guitar solo.
Well,
that
like
I'm
we talked about,
Prince.
We were like listening to the intro, the very beginning, we're like, what is that? I think it's like a tenor and a trumpet, kind of just like doing some impartial or something like that.
It's like this really dissonant thing.
Yeah, really dissonant. So saxophone on tracks 1, 2, and 8, this would be track 2, Cindy C, is Eric Leeds.
Okay.
Eric Leeds plays sax. And Atlanta Bliss on the same tracks 1, 2, and 8 plays trumpet.
And is Prince on guitar taking the solos?
Oh, yeah.
In this? Yeah,
oh, yeah.
I would assume so.
Prince's lead vocals of various instruments. I'm sure there's not another guitarist listed in the whole personnel, so I'm sure he's doing every guitar part. If you're Prince, who else? Why would you want anyone?
You know,
else to
Prince
do it anyway?
Talking about kind of how like prolific he was and just what this insane musician he was. I think his first album, he played all the instruments.
Really?
Yeah.
We'll have to look into that.
He's
we'll
like one of those people, like, you know, like a Dave Grohl, how he did that, and Trent Reznor.
Or a Beck.
Yeah.
We don't compare Prince to Beck, because Beck is not that good, but Prince is. But same thing. Oh, yeah, I did not know that. The first album, really.
The first one. I mean, I don't know about the other albums. I'm sure he's had some like, you know, really legendary bands play with him.
Yeah,
so
I've seen videos of him like doing bass solos, slap bass, playing drums. He just sits behind a drum set and plays on a video I've seen before. Dude's virtuosic. I don't necessarily like a lot of his music, but I can respect the dude as a musician and his composition skills, instrumental skills, everything like that. Sydney C. Second track. You want to move on to track three?
Let's do it.
Track three, Dead On It. Track 3 was Prince's then response to the growing rap music genre. A 2016 Questlove Supreme interview with Wendy and Lisa, I don't know who Wendy and Lisa are, I'm sorry, revealed that a 1989 party they attended where the DJ played Public Enemy's Fight the Power actually helped him convince him otherwise that rap wasn't actually all that bad. So this seems like I said, a track just aimed at that genre and how harmful it might be to African Americans, which turned out to be wrong. I think he just didn't know a lot about it at the time. And
I mean, rap at this point was a fairly new genre.
Right. I think like Sugar Hill Gang was not that far before this.
No,
they were
I
want like
to
the,
say they were maybe like late 70s, early
80s. I think I might. We might be wrong on that, but. The verse that came out to me in this song was verse 3. It kind of summarizes the whole song in general to me. It says, "See, the rapper's problem usually stem from being tone deaf." So there's like a lack of musicality in the hip-hop genre is kind of what he's saying. "Pack the house, then try to sing. There won't be no one left." And then it says, "Ha-ha, on it." You know, "Parking lot's on fire, brothers peeling out of the town. They say in disgust, they singing in their guts. Rapping done let us down. You gotta be dead on it." So I think it's like saying that there's a lack of musicality and form and everything with rap. And whether it was on purpose or not, this song is what he thinks rap sounds like, for good or for bad. As to me, trying to listen to it as a song, even knowing like what he wrote it for, whether it be on purpose or not, like, I don't want to listen to this song at all. Like, was that intentional? Like, he made the song sound like what he thought rap sounded like? Probably. Does it make for a good song on an album? Not really. Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
Honestly, it's probably my least favorite track.
Oh, for sure.
Album.
I think it's known that it's not a favorite at all.
And, I mean, maybe this is just because, you know, where we're at now. I mean, we obviously didn't grow up with, like,
right,
this music.
Right, we have
music.
Kind of what's it called? Like a
outsider's view, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, we know, obviously.
Hindsight,
what,
too.
Yeah. We kind of know what rap became afterwards.
Right.
And I mean, you know, I have certain groups that I like that, you know.
Yeah, right.
What I'm getting at is, like, I guess the late 80s sort of rap thing,
the popular,
is just not my thing.
Yeah, and
you know?
I mean, and that's... And I'm glad we brought up that he heard Fight the Power, because that, I mean, at the time, you know, late 80s, early 90s, it was like that cheesy, kind of how this song sounds, but more commercialized sounding. I mean, you had
Run DMC.
Like Vanilla Ice, just really cheesy you know, right before like Nirvana, everything, that's what was popular.
Yeah.
It was like the Vanilla Ice and just really awful, terrible hip hop music. And that's probably what he heard a lot of going into the late 80s and everything. And I think Prince actually, if Fight the Power changed his mind, I think he probably actually really liked, if I had to guess, I don't know, like the 90s gangster rap.
Right.
You know, Run NWA, Run DMC, stuff like that.
Right.
Because groups like, for instance, like De La Soul, Tribe Called Quest were not popular.
Right.
At the time. They were really underground.
Mm-hmm.
I think Tribe Called Quest, I think, was around then. De La Soul, I know for sure was. Tribe Called Quest might not have been. I can't remember off the top of my head. I think they were, but they might not have been. But that was super underground. Very part of the region they were in, and that's it.
Right.
So I think I understand his quarrel with hip hop at the time, because I mean, it wasn't that great.
Right.
I would agree a lot of it. But was this track necessary? And the way he kind of disses it as a whole genre instead of digging deeper, was it necessary? I don't think so. And it makes for a pretty bad song lyrically. Instrumentally, I have written down that I like the guitar part. It's pretty cool.
I started saying I like the guitar part, and I like the kind of heavier bass.
Yeah,
bass
like that's throughout. Cool. And I also said like it feels like a weird mix between, I call them Prince-isms,
mm-hmm.
which we're hearing a lot of in this album, with a lot of like late 80s hip hop tropes, and they really don't mesh together well.
Yeah.
So I'm glad. I don't think he ever did like a full hip-hop album. Probably
no.
didn't. I'm glad he didn't.
Yeah.
Because he just, that's just not his thing.
But, with that being said, I would, you know, you kind of, all these artists who pass away, you kind of like to see, like, where they would go and stuff.
Right.
I would like to see what Prince could do with, like, a Kendrick Lamar or something.
Oh, yeah, that'd
just
be cool.
Creating, like, you know, maybe not rapping or anything like that,
you
but just
what?
Doing, like, instrumentation.
Yeah.
In
Even
composing
like,
stuff like that.
If he had give it time, he probably would have done I think he would have done like a more true
mm-hmm.
interpretation of it. I think just when he wrote this and at the time and what was popular,
right.
It makes sense that he wouldn't like it. I mean, I wouldn't like it either, but
yeah.
I don't think this song was necessary.
Right.
I don't think it was, there was no point of it. The point to it, it doesn't, it has a point, but it's not a good point. So that's kind of what I think of it. And like one thing that reminds me of when you're speaking of like Prince doing something with like a Kendrick
mm-hmm.
Lamar or something like that, it kind of reminds me of when David Bowie did Black Star with who was the
Donnie McCaslin?
Yeah and his group, like went into jazz
mm-hmm.
kind of territory. I think it would, like, that worked really well.
Yeah.
I think Prince doing it, like him doing the hook and having Kendrick, like other guest artists doing verses, I think actually it probably would have been pretty cool.
Yeah.
I think he probably could have pulled it off. It might not have been like his best work. I think he could have done a good job with it though, but I think, like I said, just at the time when this was recorded.
I mean, rap has came like, you know, such a far away at this point.
Really far.
You know, from like this sort of simplistic, you know.
And I think it's ironic that like the genre was actually kind of built on what he kind of wants this album to be, which was black empowerment.
Mm-hmm.
That's what a lot of hip-hop is based on. And maybe at the time too, like a lot of popular hip-hop, like I said, like Vanilla Ice, and there's other ones I just can't think of right now. I don't want to think of them right now, but they weren't rapping about you know, black empowerment or poverty or anything like that. Like the themes of this album, they were rapping about like girls and Ice Baby.
Beastie Boys.
First
Beastie Boys album is kind of like that.
It is. And this album was before Paul's Boutique, which is far far above. But yeah, I would agree, like Beastie Boys.
License to Ill.
Is pretty like party friday.
Even they kind of look back on that album
and
themselves from it.
Yeah.
It's what made them. But you look at what they did later on, and it's like,
that's a pretty now I'm thinking about it, that's kind of like a popular thing amongst the popular artists.
Mm-hmm.
Is their first albums they kind of did, like Radiohead is a good example.
Right.
They kind of distance themselves from that. But I'll say it again. I can see why he felt like this, but I just don't like the song.
Yeah, I don't
this
either.
It's just not a good song.
Yeah.
So Dead On It, track 3. Last song of side A, track 4, When Two Are in Love. I think this song is good. So we're gonna hear it, listen to it, talk about it, Here we go. When Two Are in Love.
Sophia Shield tonight. The brightest star. When two are in love, they'll whisper secrets only they two can hear. When two are in love.
All right, When Two Are in Love is the seventh song on Prince's 10th album, Love Sexy, as well. The track was first featured on the Black Album. In 1989, it was included as a B-side of the single Scandalous, the fourth single from Prince's 11th album, Batman. When Two Are in Love, Josh, what do you think of this one?
You know, just kind of soulful ballad.
Soulful ballad. You know? Soulful ballad in an album thus far of funk
heavy rap.
Yeah.
You know.
It you know what? Its inclusion is a good and a bad thing, because I don't think I could have listened to a fourth song in a row of like another LaGrind or
yeah.
Dead on it or whatever.
It does kind of change the pace of the album.
Yeah,
a nice break, you know.
It is a good break, but also it has nothing to do with like the theme, I guess, like the deeper theme of black empowerment. It does have something to do with the theme of white sex, obviously,
right?
Because it's a ballad and it's a Prince ballad, which are usually pretty good. And this song is pretty good. It's probably one of the best songs on the album. It's very listenable. It might be, thus far, the only song I'd probably come back to and listen to on my own time.
Yeah.
I'd say. Yeah, it's just... there's just not too much to say about it. It's pretty by the numbers.
And you said this one was a track that ended up on Love Sexy?
It is on Love Sexy.
Okay.
Yeah, it is on Love Sexy.
I could see that.
Yeah. I think it probably fits more on... Just if I had to guess...
Right.
It probably fits more on that album, with probably the theme of that one more than this one. But yeah, there's a lot of words about doing things with a woman. We're looking through the lyrics, a lot of kissing, a lot of love, L-O-V-E, a lot of bathing.
Wow.
A lot of bathing.
Okay.
I think that's like a big... I don't know if that's super popular anymore.
Bathing?
I mean, not bathing. Well, maybe. That's completely turning me around on a completely different topic. But have you heard like what Dax Shepard? Like
I was just
you were gonna say that too.
Yeah.
They're like not bathing their kids for like days on end until
yeah.
they smell.
Yeah.
I'm like,
and there was another one. It was Mila Kunis.
That's why I asked you.
Mila Kunis,
yes.
And Dax Shepard
and Kirsten Bell, I think,
yeah.
is his wife.
Yeah.
They don't bathe. Is I don't know.
You know,
someone's got to do some research on that.
I guess, you know, that's just the way they want to live. I guess that's fine for them.
I have heard
works, but
that, like,
I couldn't
like,
live that way.
Well, I couldn't either. I hate feeling like
right.
I can't not. But like I've heard though, like if you don't shower or bathe, like it's actually better for your skin.
It is, yeah.
But
you can definitely
also
overdo it too.
Yeah, but also you smell.
Yeah.
So what would you rather? I mean, I guess they'd rather have good skin.
Yeah.
They're on TV. They'd want to look like they have better skin.
I would just rather feel clean, I guess.
Me too.
To
this is
days
completely
and days
off.
On end.
We're all completely
that
off
is
the
true.
Rails right now. But that completely that reminded me of that for some reason. But no, I was going to say bathing. Like, couples bathing together seems like such a, like an 80s, 90s, like a TV thing. See, it feels like a soap opera thing. Like
yeah.
bathing, like bubbles and candles, you know?
Romantic.
Romantic.
It's romantic.
I think people just... Like,
it's a ballad.
People
it's a
just,
soulful ballad.
Yeah, but I think people just like watch Netflix now.
Yeah.
And like...
And chill.
Have sex. Yeah. And chill. Yeah. That seems like a kind of an... I don't think people do that anymore.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I have... I don't know. I don't know. I don't have sex. So...
I feel like this is a section we should probably edit out.
No, we'll keep it. Nothing's forbidden, nothing's taboo, says Prince. Nothing is forbidden. Dude, Prince, hey man, he's a symbol. Hold me, yeah, just like that, don't move. That's what he says, it's the outro. Pretty good.
Yep.
Dude's, hey man, you gotta, like I said, I respect him. And he's got his ways, man.
I mean, this isn't one of the Prince ballads that I would necessarily go back to. I mean, like I said, When Doves Cry, I think that's one of the better ones.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, that's, you know, one of the huge hits that he's came out
this
with.
This was not a huge hit. This is pretty by the numbers, and I think if I looked correctly, it's not even the biggest song on, like, Love Sexy. Like I said, it was a B-side on the Batman album.
So this was on two albums then?
I think it was on the Batman soundtrack.
Well, three, I guess, technically, because it's on this one.
Well, it was a B-side to the Batman album, so it wasn't even actually
on the album.
Yeah, it was just a B-side to it. So I don't think it's very popular.
That's kind of odd, though, that he released it, like, kind of three times almost. I mean, once on the Black album, once the B-side to a Batman album track, and then Love Sexy.
Might have just wanted to push it. I don't think it was super popular. It definitely is so far my favorite. It's, like I said, it's the only one I'd come back to and listen to.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Track 4, Love Sexy. Not Love Sexy. When Two Are in Love.
When Two Are
Track
in Love.
Track 4, When Two Are in Love, which is on Love Sexy. Cool. All right. I think we'll move on to Side 2, Track 1, Bob George.
Let me see you dance.
All right, Bob George is one of Prince's most unusual songs. In the song, Prince assumes the identity of a profane, gun-wielding alter ego who murders a woman and then dismisses the figure of Prince as that skinny motherfucker with the high voice. The name for the track was a combination of Bob Cavallo, which was a former manager, and Nelson George, who was felt to have become very critical of Prince. Bob George features a growling monologue that is slowed down to the point of being almost unrecognizable as Prince. Some interpret the track as a commentary on the glorification of violence and misogyny inherent in the gangsta rap musical genre, which was in its infancy at the time. That's motherfucker, Prince.
You know, it's songs like this that make me kind of, you know, agree with him not wanting to put this album out.
Oh, yeah.
Because it is, you know, it's...
This is evil, dude.
Like I said, obviously we're not, like, experts on Prince, and there's so much music there that I haven't heard a lot of it. But I could see this being something totally left field for him to put out, and I mean...
It is. It's sad. I mean, as much as I know, which isn't much... It seemed, I mean, totally out there.
Yeah.
Totally out there.
Like you hear this song and you're like, this is the same guy who made Purple Rain in 1999.
Yeah.
You wouldn't kind of expect that. And I could definitely see him not wanting to be like, okay, if I put this album out, if something was to happen to me, and like, this is the last album that I've ever released, this is what people are going to remember me by.
Yeah.
I could definitely agree with him. Like, I would not want this
to
be my last track. And it's kind of funny, too, because there's... It's like... the whole thing's like a diss track, right? On, like, some of his managers.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Yeah, and, like, of the rap.
There's this Guns N' Roses song called Get in the Ring, and it's, like, the same sort of concept. Like,
is that on... What is that on?
I think it's on one of the Use Your Illusion albums.
Okay.
And it's, like, you know, the same thing. They're just trash-talking all these people who have been, you know... giving them problems.
Yeah.
And it's just, you hear those tracks and you're like, okay.
I mean, it's not like there's no such thing as a good diss track.
Right. The thing with it, though, is it's there for the moment, and I feel like listening to it years and years later, like we are,
in hindsight, it's not. So, other than lyrical content, dude, that drum sound.
Yeah. There's not much going on in the track either.
Yeah.
Either.
Oh no, there's not. It's hard. This is hardly a song.
Yeah.
It's almost like slam poetry.
Right.
Or something, you know.
Right.
But not very poetic or anything. A lot of cursing in this.
Yeah.
A lot of no words.
You can definitely tell he's angry. This is probably his angriest album, you know.
As far as we know,
mm-hmm.
as far as I've heard, I would say so. I mean, especially Dead on It, and then
Cindy C.
Cindy C. And then this. I mean, which makes When Two Are in Love just so much more out of place.
Right, right.
You know? And then this follows that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like hearing that beautiful When Two Are in Love, and it comes out, and you hear goom, 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 goom.
Yeah.
And then the low pitched Prince just ripping into whoever.
Yeah.
Is crazy. Yeah. So I also had written like the low pitched vocals. Like, good lord, man. You know, and also I quoted, this is one of the lyrics in the song. It says, "For someone who can't stand them TV dinners, you sure eat enough of them, motherfuckers." I said that was hilarious. I think it's like funny to the point. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
But this is like 6 minutes long.
Yeah.
Of just that. You just know, some little bit of music here and there. But just
drags on.
It's on and on and on. I can totally agree with like if. This was like my last album. Would I really want this to be what I'm known by? Because right before this was Peace, like The Sign of Times.
Yeah,
that was right before this.
Yeah,
and then you put out this, and I can, you know, I agree. I think there's a Jim Morrison quote where he said every night on stage at the end he'd come out. I think this is Jim Morrison. He'd come out and they'd act like he got shot or something like that. And he's like, well, why? People would ask him, like, why would you do that? And he said, because, like, any show could be my last. And, like, having that mentality, like, this kind of goes along with that. Like, if you make a record and you might think it's your last, you really want that to be it? And,
right.
I agree, for sure. Bob George. Great track. Not really. But Bob George. All right. We'll move on to Sign 2. Track 2, we have Super Funky Califragisexy.
Wow.
Side 2, track 2.
That is a mouthful.
It is a mouthful. Here we go.
You ought to keep the blood flowing down to your feet. Brother Maurice will be round in a minute with a bucket filled in a squirrel meat. The blood real good if you drink it real fast, but the aftertaste just lasts and lasts. So if you kiss somebody, you want to party all night.
Alright, Super Super Funky Califragisexy.
Say that 5 times fast.
Super Funky, I can't. I literally already messed up.
You can't even
say
it one
time. Super Funky Califragisexy, there we go. That's a mouthful.
Yeah.
And he had to perform that too.
Yeah.
Props to him. So, Super Funky Califragisexy is about the then-growing ecstasy, or MDMA, or Molly, or X, drug, culture invading the club scene in the late 80s. The song itself is about Prince hooking up with a woman at a club while using the drug, as well as describing the effects that it has on people, heightening their sense of pleasure during sexy time.
There you go.
There you go. Super Funky Califragisexy. Josh, what do you think about this too?
Honestly, it's one of my favorites.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's not too bad. It's got verses and...
Yeah, and it's a little more, I guess, kind of structured.
A little structured, yeah.
Honestly, when I was listening to it, the verses kind of reminded me of, like, I could see Anthony Kiedis singing them. Yeah.
Oh my God.
That's what it sounded like to me, you know? Like, it sounds like it could have been a Chili Peppers song or something. You know, like, from their 80s albums or something.
Yeah, maybe so.
But I definitely thought this is one of the more re-listenable songs, honestly.
Now I'm thinking about it. The first couple Red Hot Chili Peppers albums, their album titles,
mm-hmm.
like Uplift Mofo Party Plan or whatever.
Freaky Style.
That kind of sounds like a Prince-y.
Yeah.
Okay, that kind of were Prince influences.
And this was...
I could see that on
this
early
was like,
stuff for sure.
Yeah, this was 88, right?
Yeah. So I could... Their last one with Hillel Slovak was 87.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That was Uplift.
Yeah, and Mother's Milk was 89.
Yeah.
So I could kind of see that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could
like,
kinda
like
see
I
that.
Could kind of see this song being reworked into, like, on maybe Blood Sugar Sex Magic
right.
or something like that. Like, you can kind of hear that influence that they took from Prince, I guess.
I guess you could. Yeah, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's pretty cool. Yeah, all my thoughts are the funk is definitely back
right.
on this one. I love the title. Hook's cool. The electric synth part. I think that was pretty cool. It kind of plays well with like that theme of the theme of the song, like the ecstasy. It kind of sounds sort of like that. I don't know how to explain that. It's that synth sound kind of sounds like what I think of when I hear the word ecstasy. You know,
yeah,
like kind of dissonant sounding, but
yeah,
it's going down like that scale, pretty kind of spooky sounding a little bit. There's some upbeat music, you know, some sour. The string part is kind of soury sounding. It is pretty long.
Yeah,
it's pretty long.
That seems to be the general thing with like most of these tracks.
It's
that
pretty long.
They kind of drag on a little too long.
Yeah,
and towards the end it just feels like an open jam.
A lot of refrains, a lot of just kind of saying things just for the sake of saying them. You know, in Seven Measures he wanted someone to scream.
Yeah,
and they screamed in Seven Measures. So whoever he had queued up to scream was probably him, just overdubbing. But they screamed.
So. Clever little thing to do.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. I think it's kind of like a word painting, you know, like, sort of. I mean, he's kind of literally ordering someone to scream, and then they do, but it's pretty cool. This song, I like it. I think it's good. This and La Grind are up there as far as the funk tunes go.
Yeah.
So they've had two solid funk tunes so far to me. I like this one a lot. Super funky, Califragisexy. Anything else you want to say about this one?
Nope.
Let's move on. We have two more songs left. I don't know if I, you know, we're just going to let it roll. Let's just let it roll.
Serve it up, Frankie.
Oh, girl, where'd you get those shoes? Marie, what can I serve you?
Squirrel meat!
Cap, what's happening, babe?
Get out of my face. Honey, it's not that type of party.
What you mean?
Honey, you see these pumps?
I want you to meet some friends of mine. No, you'll like them. They're musicians.
Two Nigs United for West Compton.
Track 3 of Side 2. Josh.
Yeah, Two Nigs United for West Compton.
What'd you think of this tune?
I liked
7 minute long.
I liked it. I thought it was cool.
I thought it would have been cooler if it didn't have all that talking at the beginning.
Yeah.
It's whatever. It's okay. It's an instrumental. It's fine.
As a bassist, I can
appreciate
the bass.
Yeah. I it's not like I don't like you know, jams.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I love live jazz music, and that's, you can jam a lot, and that's cool and everything. This is an instrumental jazz funk jam, which was revisited later as a live song on the One Night Alone live album.
Now, with that, I mean, I don't know, I don't think Prince was using the same band.
Probably not.
During that period.
This was...
This is 88.
14 years later.
And then, yeah,
probably not
that
same
album
people.
Came out in 02,
yes,
03,
yeah.
Something like that.
So the band, I don't know if that has anything to do with it. I think it's just, it probably works better as a live album. And especially if you're there.
Right.
I think it's a lot cooler. I mean, cool bass solo.
Yeah.
I said.
Who plays bass on this album?
I don't know if Prince plays on that tune or not. Let's take a little look here. So, as far as I can tell, he might be playing bass on every song.
Really?
There's no bass player listed anywhere.
Wow.
He's lead vocals in various instruments. He might be playing bass himself.
Okay, yeah, because I don't know exactly who plays on all these tracks.
Yeah, we have saxophone, trumpet. We have a drummer on one other song. On this song is a different drummer. He probably plays drums on all the other songs, too. So you're talking
it's
about
not Sheila Yee.
No, she is backing vocals on our first track, which was La Grind. She is percussion on track 2, which was Cindy C, and then drums on this one.
Okay.
So he was playing drums on everything else, it seems.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, so he's doing the bass on every song.
Wow.
Played the bass solo on this. I mean, which we talked about earlier, a testament to his virtuosity.
Yeah.
I really can't knock him for that.
No.
This song, though, definitely is a better live song, I think. It's cool. I mean, is this something that does it improve the overall album experience? Not totally.
I guess it's kind of like the ballad track from.
I guess so.
It's like a nice change of pace,
though.
I guess. Yeah.
I mean, like that wasn't even. I don't know. It's there's no. I want to assume. That the talking at the beginning follows the album, the theme, I guess.
Yeah.
They're talking about, like, a girl getting, where'd you get those shoes, you know, playing music. It doesn't make too much sense to me. Maybe someone else has more insight to it. I don't.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot of things listed about the song either. It kind of just seems like me talking, just an idea he had to put in there instead of it being just instrumental
right.
The entire time. So, not a lot to say about this track. It's really weird because it's the second to last song.
Yeah.
You know, just a weird instrumental thrown in there.
Yeah.
It's weird. But to tie the album together, we have our last track. Track 4 of side 2, Rock Hard in a Funky Place. In a Funky Place was originally considered for the inclusion on the planned Crystal Ball album, I think around 1986, and also the Camille Project, which was actually a pseudonym he had for like a female alter ego, which explains the kind of high-pitched female sounding vocals in the song that he had pitched up a little bit. Josh, thoughts on the song?
I think it's a solid closer.
Yeah,
solid.
That was too bad.
Nah, I thought it was a really good song. I mean, you know, just a heavy funk song.
Heavy funk song, for sure.
I really liked the guitar solo in it, too.
Yeah, cool guitar solo.
The guitar solo and the sax solo, I thought those were
cool.
Both really good.
Yep. They had another, like, triplet,
yep.
Kind of synth sound to it. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah.
Probably one of my favorite songs on the entire album.
Easily a highlight, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. If there were more songs like it, probably would have been a better album.
Yeah.
I think. Kind of cool. Let's see. I think he accurately described the ending of the whole album, because he does say, what kind of fuck ending was that?
Yeah, it's kind of like a little Helter Skelter ending, right?
Yeah,
where
yeah.
Where it just
like,
kind of
like
fades out and then comes back in
with
some
little
tidbit of, you know, vocals.
Little bit, yeah. Yeah, I think it was not too bad. That's it, though. That's Prince's Black album.
Yep.
It's an experience.
Yeah,
it's an experience.
If you're
a
Prince fan, obviously, you're going to listen to this.
Yeah, yeah.
And you should. And
you should.
You know, it's not a terrible album. Like you said earlier,
no.
I don't think Prince ever put out
a
terrible album or something that's just completely unlistenable. But, you know, I don't think this is one that I'd necessarily go back to in his discography.
Not really.
I
think some highlights for me, probably La Grind,
mm-hmm.
When Two Are in Love, Rock Hard in a Funky Place, and Super Funk Califragisexy. I think those are my highlights.
Yeah.
They're decent. They're decent enough. I'd probably listen to them maybe again, maybe. I'm like, hey, remember that one song? Or what was that one song? Oh, yeah. Oh, I like the song. You know, I'd come back to it. Especially probably Rock Hard.
Yeah.
It was probably... I'd say it was probably my favorite song.
Right.
Good album closer. So those are probably my highlights. I don't know. Would you agree with... Are there any other songs that...
I like Cindy C.
Cindy C.
I think that's a good song. Cindy C, Super Calla, whatever, you know, that one.
Whatever it's called.
And then, obviously, this last one, I thought those were all really solid tracks.
Now, worst? What do you think the worst song was, probably? I'm going to have to say probably Boy Bob George. Not Boy George, that's the guy from from the Karma Chameleon.
I would think Bob George.
Probably
too.
Bob George. Dead On It's pretty close.
Yeah. But. Dead On It's more listenable, re-listenable.
Yeah.
Bob George is one of those songs that's like
super weird.
You hear it one time and that's
it's enough. It's
kind of
like it's like a what am I trying to think of? Like a I don't know. I can't think of the word I'm trying to say. It's you hear it once and you're like, oh, okay, cool, and then you don't like, you don't want to hear it again. I can't think of the word I'm trying to think of right now, but yeah, Bob George probably the worst song I'd say. Yeah.
And you know, after listening to all these songs, it's like I said, I can kind of see why he wouldn't want to put this song this album out. It's not bad, but it's just, you know, lyrically, it's more aggressive, intense, I guess, than most of his other albums.
Not totally, not very commercial.
Right.
Not very commercial at all. Do you think if he put this album out normal, do you think his legacy might have been any different? Or do you think it would have just been a stinker and a career of greats?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it really would have mattered too
much.
Well,
I mean, he did put it out eventually.
Yeah.
I don't think they really pushed it, but it came out in 94.
I think had he just put this album out and not tried to take it back, it wouldn't really be quite as like, I don't know, this sort of legend album.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Definitely not. Yeah.
And it's not legend because of like how great it is. It's pretty much just legendary just for the fact that it's like, there's this whole backstory about the album being evil and Prince just pulled it.
I think that probably adds more to the interest of it than anything. It probably, if that backstory wasn't behind it, it probably would have been even more forgettable.
Right.
It probably would have fell by the wayside even more. I mean, if he didn't take it off. So maybe, I don't know, maybe at the end of the day, him like scrapping it and pulling it from shelves.
That's what
made
drew
more
the
people
attention.
Want to hear it, you know? And I think there's probably other Prince albums that are bad. They're probably might actually be worse than this. There might be. I don't know. Later career stuff or there might be, or even song. There's probably songs he's put out that are worse than the songs on here.
I'm sure there
is. You know.
I'm sure there is.
So maybe not worse than Bob George. I don't know. That's pretty weird and out there. But I don't think because there's no famous, you know, artist or band from that long ago that didn't put out something that was lackluster. And, you know, that didn't affect their careers. I don't think if he put this out, it would have done anything to him. He would have gone on just the same.
Well, and the thing is, too, when he put this album out, he had already had Love Sexy ready to go.
Yeah.
And I mean, so I don't know, and I don't think he really did press for really any of his albums that came out. So, I mean, this album probably would have just came out and it would have been a new Prince album for however many months until Love
like
Sexy came out
year,
and then
right.
there's the newer album, you know, and then the Batman soundtrack came out
the same following
year. So I think it just would have been something like that was out and then that would have been it.
Yep. You know? I think so too.
A bad album, but not one that I'd go back to.
I wouldn't either. I mean, I'll probably head over to like Spotify and maybe like one or two.
Yeah.
But
I do want to listen because I've never heard Love Sexy.
It would be interesting to hear that as opposed to this.
Right.
So close.
Because those songs,
in time.
I mean, those albums had to be recorded back
around
to back,
the same time? Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd be interested to hear it. Maybe that'll be another episode or something.
Yeah.
We'll see. But, yeah. So, I think that concludes our first Dead Wax podcast episode of the Record Skip series.
Yeah.
I think that'd be it. Alright. Well, I want to thank everyone. If you got this far, that's pretty awesome. You sat through our ranting and mumbling and babbling about Prince's Black Album. If you got this far, I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Very nice of you guys. I hope you enjoyed it. I think it's only going to get better from here. Hopefully. I don't know if it can get worse.
Maybe.
I don't know. Also, I think, and if you're listening and you know how to contact us, and we're going to find ways to do that for you guys in like an email or something, but not, we don't have anything established right now. Send us like, what should we listen to next? Like, we hardly knew anything about this album. Send us one we don't do know. Send us one we don't know.
Yeah.
I would love to be sent anything, good or bad.
Yeah.
I don't care. A stinker in an artist's career that can be on record skip. A really good album that we can just review that we've already heard or never heard. It doesn't matter to me. Let's listen to some music.
Yeah. We're pretty open. I mean, you know, I think I like to listen to pretty much everything. You know, there's not really any sort of genre of music that I'm just stay clear of or anything.
Yeah.
You know?
So anything. I mean, as far back as you can go. Obscure, I don't care.
Let's do some Gregorian chant.
Yeah. Let's get some, what's it called? Monopoly?
Yeah.
Songs, just one line of singing. Let's just do it. I don't think, you know what? I think no one is going to want to hear that.
Probably not.
I think we'll skip over
that. If there's someone out there that's actually, like, you know, bumping some
there's
got to
be.
You know,
there's got to be.
Gregorian chant.
You know what it probably is?
That'd be impressive.
It's probably people who listen to Gregorian chants of covers of songs. Like, there's one of,
do
like...
Do those exist?
There's, like, I think there's one of, like, Smells Like Teen Spirit.
Wow.
Where it's, like, Gregorian chant. I don't think it's monophonic, though. I think it's probably poly.
Yeah.
There's multiple voices going on. Or not mono, homophonic would be one, I think. But it's probably polyphonic. But yeah, there's people out there.
Yeah.
Weird people. Just weirdos. They probably also like this album, too. The same people who listen to Gregorian chant music like Prince's Black album a lot.
It's the same.
Same. If you, like, if you took a poll, it'd be like a Venn diagram. They'd be, like, intertwined. There'd be one circle. People who like Gregorian chants and Prince's Black Album. I think we're putting this outro out way too long. We're getting off topic.
Probably so.
We should end it right here. Thanks, you guys. We appreciate it very much.
Until next time.
Until next time.